I'm Adam Epstein, and I'm a dirty moderate. Dirty moderates, is anything sacred anymore? Is anything protected anymore? Can anything just be earned anymore? Or is entitlement the name of the game? Thanks for joining me today. I'm going to talk to you about entitlement, the ability to throw a tantrum when you don't get your way, the lack of willingness to engage in hard, difficult stuff. And I mean educational stuff. Last week, a renowned professor of organic chemistry named Maitland Jones. He was a tenured professor from Princeton. He literally wrote a textbook. It's considered one of the definitive textbooks on organic chemistry. He'd come out of retirement to take an adjunct faculty position at NYU to teach organic chemistry, for which he was widely renowned. Now, he was terminated because the students who were taking, remember, organic chemistry, one of the hardest classes anybody can take in college. I did not take it, but my dad's a doctor. He took it. If you were a STEM major or you want to go to medical school specifically, you have to take organic chem. I think it's even two semesters, but you have to do well in it. You have to pass it. No one said it's easy. It's never been easy. Well, Professor Jones was let go because I think 82 of his 350 students complained in a petition that their grades were suffering, their grades were going down, not up, his style was too harsh, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The New York Times reported on this. You guys can read it. The article is by Stephanie Saul. It was last week, and then there's an editorial or a response to it today in the opinion section for Times readers. And this is really a kind of, let's call it a macro conversation I want to have, a gestalt, right? The gestalt of where we are. I'm an NYU alum, okay? I went there in the 90s. I proudly did very, very well there and got my Bachelor of Arts in political science, political theory technically, but poli-sci. And I had a rigorous curriculum. Sometimes some classes were easier than others, but I was expected to take, especially in my junior, senior year, high-level seminar classes, which required me to engage with the great philosophers of the last 3,000 years, the politics of the 20th century, historical trends, et cetera, et cetera. We were asked often, besides just taking exams, we were asked to write really rigorous papers based on critical thinking. And shout out right now to the man who had the greatest impact on me at NYU. He just retired, Professor George Shulman, a real icon in the department of Gallatin, the Gallatin School, which was my program. And then he taught in the Gallatin School. He taught political theory, political science, all that stuff. And George had rigor. You know, George was known for being beloved. He was beloved, but he was known to be, oh, shock and awe, clutch the pearls, have a heart attack, kids. He was known to be a hard grader. He was. And I don't say this to brag. I received A's from George in every seminar I took, but I'm proud to say I got an A, not even an A minus, just an A, the highest grade. They don't have an A plus. Because I work my tail off to get it. And he forced me to be a better thinker. Actually, he's the foundation for all my love and understanding of politics. He gave me the foundation to go on to Brown when I went to graduate school, which was 20 years later. And I had a tremendous intellectual ferment and a tremendous intellectual well to draw from because George forced us to think. Now, the humanities aren't the sciences, but they all require critical thought. They all require total commitment, engagement, critical thinking, and resilience. Are academic standards dropping? Are our schools becoming this entitled? Are students just merely customers, as some people have come to argue. You know, NYU's like $83,000 a year with housing to attend while living in New York City. I mean, Brown's grad school was about 70 all in. I mean, that's what these price tags of these elite universities are charging. NYU, I think US News came out, I think it's the 20th best, whatever, institution of higher learning in the country. They accept about 11% of its applicants, is considered extremely selective. They have their pick in that they apparently had something like 80,000 applications last year, I think the most of any school. They were founded in 1831, and for the longest time, were considered the largest private university. I don't know if that's still true, but that's irrelevant. But students at NYU are expected to rise to a standard. Students in a STEM program, especially those who have to take organic chemistry, many of whom wanted to go on to medical school, and I'm the son of a doctor, that is a gateway. You know, if you kind of get weeded out of that, it makes your chances getting into medical school, which are very, very infinitesimal anyway. It makes them that much harder. But are professors and administrators too beholden now to the students' emotions and whining and fragile needs because of their parents paying a very high sticker price? So Professor Jones says that he noticed a decline in the student ability about a decade ago, students' ability, excuse me. He made his exams easier, actually, and an unusual number of students still did poorly on them. See, already, again, that never gets reported or it's buried in the reporting. He actually tried to sort of, for a icon like him, tenured at Princeton, who had retired and came out of retirement to be an adjunct at NYU. How lucky are these kids? The man is 82 or 84, around there, to get an icon, a giant, out of retirement to teach them is a gift. So the students still did poorly, though he made the exams easier. Then the pandemic hit, and Professor Jones, Maitland Jones, wrote a grievance letter to NYU where he said in the last 2 years, they fell off a cliff, they being the students. We now see single-digit scores and even zeros. Students who had completed their high school years during the pandemic, who had actually been at home, many of them, and I, that's another conversation for us. I think the stay-at-home orders have done so much damage, not just the economy, but to the well-being of everybody, the mental awareness, mental health, and in the case of students, mental capacity, because they missed out. If you're a junior, you're missing out on the most important year for your college transcript. Or if you missed out on your freshman year of high school, that's when you sort of get used to the rhythm of what it means no longer to be a junior high schooler. You know, what it means to be something of a young adult, even though you're 14. Remote learning was a disaster. It was a spectacular failure. And Jones had made some amends. I mean, who knew that he had even done that? He's only been at NYU for a period of time, and he did that a decade ago when he was still at Princeton. But I think of George Shulman, who I reference and who I still speak to regularly. He's now retired and he's in his early 70s. Boy, if he came out of retirement in his 80s for those students, you can't imagine what you're getting. You're getting one of the greats in the field. You're getting one of the great scholars of American studies, political science, political theory. Yeah, he's going to ask a lot of you. He's going to be very fair. He's going to be incredibly supportive. But you have to deliver your work. These students are in organic chemistry at NYU. I don't care if they were in organic chemistry anywhere. Let's not be elitist about it. It's a hard course. There are people out there getting A's in organic chemistry, doing really well because they put in the time and the effort. Yeah, sometimes you can't have a do-over. Yeah, you are disappointed. Yeah, things can get hard. Things aren't easy. But Gen Z, even maybe more than Gen X, millennial generation, are not like Gen X, my generation. You know, you were put at the deep end of the pool and you were dropped in it. That's how I learned to swim. Literally, 2 years old, my little arm rafts, whatever you call them. If I didn't come to the surface, I drowned. Now, I know that's when I was 2 years old. I don't know how they teach swimming anymore. These are 18 and 19, 20-year-old students clearly coming out of not necessarily all prestigious high schools, but they were prepared enough to meet the criteria for admission to NYU. And the stakes are higher, folks, with many, many more young people going to college, right? Income gaps between those with a college education and those without are now huge. And we see that in our voting, the non-college educated voter, the college educated voter. We've seen some interesting things there. Elite colleges in particular are seen by many as a tried and true pathway to financial well-being. I come from a family where everybody went to college. It was unheard of that you wouldn't go. I have friends in my life who didn't go. They're successful in their field, but I mean, my God, there was no way I wasn't going to go. I went to graduate school, you know, as did my dad as a doctor, as did my mom who was a social worker. You know, we all had advanced degrees. Not everybody has to have an advanced degree, but college, right, was meant to enrich and to challenge you. I always said I grew up in college. I came out of the closet in college. I found myself in college, but I learned how to be on my own and make decisions for myself. I had a very rigorous high school, and they did teach me how to study. So I lament when I hear someone like Professor Jones or any professor say, you know, these kids are woefully unprepared. I was really prepared. I think that's one of the reasons I did succeed in college, because I think I was, there were certain courses I found very easy because I feel like I was gifted. The great teachers at a private school, you know, where you're, you know, it's brutal. It's test after test, after homework. And you just, you know, I had been flexing those muscles that I had developed for a long time. But high achieving students want to go to NYU, where I went, or Brown, where I went, or Columbia, or MIT, or Stanford, or Duke, or Emory. I mean, go through the list. We can go WashU. All of them, all these elite schools. If you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen, right? And there is, to the point of our voting blocks right now, the non-college educated voter has trended more and more Republican. The college educated voter, which used to be Republican, actually, has sort of, certainly in the last election, shifted to the Democrats, the college educated suburbanite. You know, because they, and we've talked about it many times, they don't want to vote for treason and seditionists. They don't want the right to an abortion to be taken away. They don't want marriage equality rescinded, all those things. I mean, again, they come with a higher amount of education. But that doesn't mean, and this is important, that the people who are non-college educated are not smart. We need welders. We need blacksmiths. We need cobblers. We need plumbers. And this is honorable work. Competitive academic institutions are not for everybody. And we shouldn't be leaving those other people out. And we talked about that in the student loan debate, and I tried to explain why I am for it, though those people who didn't go to college are going to have to bear the brunt of some of that payment. But the government, as I said in that Stay Dirty, Stay Moderate, go back and listen to it, has colluded with the universities to let the universities build huge educational bureaucracies, huge higher level administrative offices, pay deans and provosts and all these people. You know, people go to get their master's in higher education so they can get a cushy job, saying they don't work hard, but a high level administrative job at any university, do very well, get very, very nice benefit package. You know, get summers off, things like that. And universities just hike tuition up and up and up. Because why? We know this. Students can go borrow the money from the government and the universities can get paid. But as students have become more academically successful, there is also evidence that they have become less resilient, more anxious, right? It's become a fraught thing. They're less able to cope with setbacks. That is cultural. That is social training. That is, I believe, does come from an ideology of everybody gets a trophy. You don't have to take responsibility. Everybody wins, and nothing can make you uncomfortable. Now, this particular issue, and already you see people online, oh, you know, man, attacking wokeness. Well, I'm not attacking wokeness. Wokeness is a broad term, and I think it gets thrown around a little too freely. But I am attacking the idea that people now as individuals don't have to be responsible. I believe that a majority of generations below me believe that they showed up. They showed up to Maitland Jones's organic chem class. Should they get an A? No, you showed up because that's the bare minimum of what you're supposed to do. But I do think the same way we have created lax standards in a lot of schools. We've gotten rid of several elite New York schools have gotten rid of the entrance exam because they found it to be discriminatory against certain groups. So they just got rid of it instead of trying to figure out maybe how to recruit people who hadn't previously been there from other marginalized groups to come in, or maybe using a different tool. They just got rid of it, even though some of the best and brightest have come out of those schools for years and years and years and years. And I'm not making an argument for standardized tests. I think they have lots of flaws, but we just do away with things now, right? NYU said, all right, these students didn't like their grades or scores. They're uncomfortable. They're upset. They don't like him. He's fired. President Biden won 60% around that of college educated voters in 2020, including an outright majority of white college graduates, which helped him run up the score in those suburbs, put him over the top in swing states. Again, that is the Lincoln Project vote. Those are the dirty moderates, guys. The independent suburbanite who used to be a Republican. Those are the Romney and McCain suburbs. Yeah, those folks didn't vote for Barack Obama. It's interesting. And by the way, college-educated, wealthy people, many of them also voted for Donald Trump. It wasn't just rubes and hayseeds out there in the heartland. Okay, according to census estimates, let's do some data here. 41% of people who cast ballots last year were four-year college graduates, so 4 in 10 Americans, okay? By contrast, just 5% of voters in 1952 had gone to college. And that's according to an American national election study from 1952. Yeah, still a lot of people that don't go to college. When JFK narrowly was elected president in 1960, he went to Harvard, of course. He won white voters without a degree, but he lost white college graduates by a 2-to-1 margin. Again, that trend, and I don't know the data for every election between 1960 and 2012, but those were tended to be higher educated, conservative-ish to moderate-ish Republican voters. The reverse was true in 2020. Biden lost white voters without a degree by a 2-to-1 margin while winning white college grads. So you see the schism, you see wage inequality, of course, you see the divide of who goes to college and how those people vote. But the one thing I will say is, and it's part of the debate, and even though I stand by what I said, I think the government has put so many people in debt, they've got to get all these kids out of it, whether they are, and again, there's an income threshold, you know, certainly if their parents make less than 125 grand a year, they got to get some help because they're going to be burdened with $900 payments or whatever it is every month, unless they get other forms of relief. But anyway, but understand how somebody who's older, didn't go to college, sees this as, well, I took out a loan I don't want to pay. I mean, I enrolled in this school. I don't want to study. I just want to get an A. You know, it's interesting. And I don't want to conflate things that don't go together. But I think there is, among generations younger than me, an entitlement. Of course, not everybody. Of course, there's people succeeding in doing work. But how about when young generations say, well, we were the generation that grew up after 9/11 and we can't own a house, so we don't have any money. And when, not to, you know, play who had it worse footsies here, but my grandparents stood in line for food during the Great Depression. My grandfather, to pay for his family grocery store, kept them afloat, to put himself through college and business school and law school. He had nothing. They went through a Great Depression, and then my grandfather went and fought among many honorable people in this country to save the world from Hitler and Hirohito's Japan. I'm just saying, did those people not have it hard? Life is hard. Things aren't easy. Sounds like I'm going to give you a Hallmark card, but I have to. The best things come when you work for them, folks, when you aren't entitled to them. I can't tell you. My parents drilled that into me. All my teachers did. I did what I had to do because I wanted to earn it. So when you looked at that paper and you saw an A, or that exam and you saw an A. Nobody gave that to me. As one of my favorite teachers in high school once said about grading, and I used it when I taught a course on producing actually at NYU, and that grading those kids was not fun. Similarly, they thought a B was the end of their life. They thought it was, you know, a four-alarm fire. But my favorite, one of my favorite teachers in high school always said, I'm not giving you a grade. You're earning it. Never forgot that. The case of Professor Jones raises very important questions. Of course, how much power do students who universities seem to think of as customers, they're consumers, and many of them think of themselves that way, how much should they have now in whether professors get hired, fired, or not? Don't forget, tenure did not apply here because he had been tenured at Princeton. He had retired and come back. It was just an adjunct, which is what I was, which means you can be fired at will or based on a certain set of circumstances. Tenure was created. Who could foresee cancel culture, folks? But so that professors can teach a class and not worry about this. Oh, you're too hard. Oh, he had said something offensive. Oh, he triggered me. I mean, yeah. The role of a university, last time I checked, is to help students learn and grow and be challenged. As an NYU alum, and again, people are saying Jones had been warned and the students didn't do as badly, but forget all that. New York Times reported on it. I don't think it's a hit job. I understand why NYU and the Washington Square News, a paper I once wrote for there, wrote a defensive editorial, but NYU made a choice. Again, guys, they made a choice. Now they don't want to stand by their choice. They're upset. You're mad at their choice, or they feel like they're being judged for their choice. What the hell is going on? Make a decision. You stick with it. Things aren't easy. NYU, don't bow down. You shouldn't have fired. If you fired him, then you stand by that. Students who didn't do well in that class, there were plenty of students who got A's. Most people aren't going to get A's. When I taught, I told them that's just the way it is. But for generational, for the education of recent generations, they have a hard time understanding this. How are students helped by universities that caved to pressure from parents or complaints about, you know, well, you charge us so much, our student has to do well. And then our student has to be a doctor. So are Gen Z surgeons who actually get into medical school, which as difficult as that is, are they going to say, oh, surgery's too hard? I don't know. Are they going to complain to the hospital the patient asks too much? Are they going to blame the bureaucracy? Are they going to say, well, I didn't learn that in school when they go to operate on your loved one? This is what we're talking about. It's not just students are consumers. Students are consumers and they are customers. And that has been a problem created by the cost of higher education. But that doesn't mean that the customer, in this case, a student in this instance, is always right. Universities have an obligation to learn and to challenge. If our universities only become customer interested and bow down to everything, we will lose one of our finest traditions here in the United States. We have some of the best institutions in the world of higher learning. The University of California system, for example, world renowned. But places like NYU with their esteemed medical school, their esteemed university overall, their esteemed law school, dental school, all of it, all the schools. College teaches you how to figure out what's in that toolbox for adulthood, right? What's that trajectory? What's that pathway? Do we want our future leaders to literally just give up when they don't understand something or complain or blame someone else? Folks, it is a problem. And I'm not just going to frame it as a right and left issue. And I'm not going to frame it in racial terms. Some people, it has nothing to do with it. These are entitled, whiny kids, many of whom and the majority of whom are probably white. Not race, but it's the abuse excuse, right? Well, I had a rough childhood, so I don't have to earn my grade. Or the teacher was hard, and he hurt my feelings. Folks, these are potentially, the future leaders of the country, but they're also the voters. And that's what we have to think about, not only what kind of education and higher education and type of learning we want in this country, but what kind of country we want. All right, folks, don't forget, go to vote.org, because we have an existential midterm election. I say it every program this year. It is it. Country first, democracy first. As you know, I am not a Democrat or Republican. I am backing Team Blue because I am so worried about the fragility of this democracy and what Trumpism could potentially continue to do to it. We have our midterm 22 campaign coverage for you coming at you week by week. I have an irregular newsletter essay on Substack. Also, of course, subscribe to us at dirtymoderate.com. All the podcast episodes are there. All the content is there. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at dirtymoderate. Again, at dirtymoderate. We come to you straight. We're saving democracy one episode at a time. No dogma dealers here, folks. Just real talk. Otherwise, why are we talking? All right, folks, thanks for joining me. Stay dirty, stay moderate, and as always, stay safe.